Welcome to Rooster Radio, where we talk to interesting people doing amazing things. I'm Andrew Montesi with James Begley. Back in episode 86, we talked to Paul van der Linden, who quit his job at IBM to start his own technology company, Outthought. At the time, Paul talked about the hopes, fears and challenges of leaving the corporate life to pursue his dreams. If you missed the chat, I've added a link in this episode description. Almost a year later, we sit down with Paul again to talk about how his journey has progressed, expectations versus the reality of starting his company, which is at the cutting edge of artificial intelligence, virtual assistants, and bot technology. Paul talks about winning his first clients, the early successes, struggles, and evolution of the business, as well as his own personal development throughout the process. Enjoy part two of our series on The Jump with Paul van der Linden. Paul, welcome to Rooster Radio.
Thank you for having me again.
It's been almost a year, and we were really keen to get you in last time around because you were in the middle of making a jump. You're 1 year down now. What stood out?
The number of things that have gone as expected and the number of things that have not. I think it's just been... Look, the term roller coaster comes to mind, and I know it's an overused word, but really it has been. It's just been incredible. The thing I take away from the first year is just how exciting it's been and how invigorating it's been getting out and doing something for yourself. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway for me.
And for our audience, how do you recap, I guess, initially what you were, what you thought the business was going to be? How do you recap that, and then has it evolved?
Yeah, sure. So I think, you might recall, I was previously working for a large international company, IBM, and with them I was very much focused on delivering artificial intelligence solutions to large organisations around Australia and New Zealand. And the opportunity identified itself to me that that there was a latent market there for smaller organisations who still had the same desire to take up artificial intelligence solutions, but perhaps didn't have the same deep pockets that the big four banks and large retailers have, for example. So the original concept was to go out and to develop a suite of products and services which allowed smaller organisations to take up those technologies and use them to their business advantage. And I think we've remained relatively true to that, I think, but there's been a lot of pivoting and a lot of changes under the covers to better understand what it is exactly we're offering, what the correct mix of services and products are. So it's changed a lot. I think the general missions remain the same, though.
How have you gone through that process of change? Were you almost assuming or looking ahead at what your clients might want, or were you more responding as it happened to feedback from those early clients?
I think it's a bit of both. There's been lots of long discussions with my business partner, Lisa Buari, and she's based in Sydney, so shout out to her. And also, really, I think, as any small organisation would know, there's a hunger there to get revenue through the door and new clients through the door. So to some degree, you're trying to adjust to what your clients need while still remaining true to where you ultimately want the company to be. So there's a bit of, I guess, tiptoeing. Mm. But I think, you know, it's worked well for us. We've now got a few client engagements under our belts. They've been predominantly services engagements. Where we ultimately want to be is more of a product company. But we're getting there.
So refresh our memory. Did you go through the process of the business plan and, you know, mapping out the strategy, or did you just jump?
It's a good question. Certainly jumped, but made out a business plan in the process. Have we remained true to it? I think to some degree, yes. But I think also, I think one thing I've discovered is just how hard it is to envisage what's going to appeal to your potential customers and what's not. So you have these ideas in your mind about, oh, well, if we do this, then, you know, for example, coming out of IBM, you sort of have a certain price point. You know these things are costing the big company. So you think, oh, well, if I only charge half of that, then suddenly everyone's going to be interested. So that seemed like a reasonable assumption to me. No, it doesn't work that way. So then you suddenly, you delve a bit further and you understand, you start to understand, okay, why is it? What is holding organisations back from taking up these sorts of technologies?
Did you find you went through a transition of having a gut instinct as to what you think the clients should take up and then a process of learning about the psychology of potential clients? And it's not always just about price. It's not always just about delivery. You know, there's the dynamics of decision makers within organizations and how you get in front of the right people. Do you feel like you've learned a lot in that space?
I think so, yeah. So whilst we're dealing with smaller organisations than I was dealing with previously, we're still dealing with relatively large organisations who, from the perspective of a startup, work at a glacial pace. So, for example, we're working with one large retailer at the moment, started talking to them last August, spoke to them for a couple of months, and they said, yep, look, we're really interested. So maybe a bit more background. Really, the key product and service we're offering is we've developed a virtual assistant framework, is what we call it, and it really is an accelerator that sits on top of natural language processing offerings by IBM and others for that matter, which allows us to implement chatbots and artificial intelligence chatbots very quickly for an organisation. So we can stand up a simple one in literally hours. And even more sophisticated ones. We've just finished engagement for Super Retail Group up in Brisbane, and in fact heading up there later this week, where we had something up and running for them in a couple of weeks. So that framework allows us to engage a lot more rapidly.
How do you compare the feeling of winning a client from when you're working at IBM, you're working for a big organisation, to now?
Oh, look, it's just so much more personal, isn't it? And the sort of revenue that we're bringing in now, I probably would have scoffed at in my previous role.
Corporate snob.
Exactly. But yet I'm so much more excited about it. So it's every little win. It's every little piece that you're delivering. You're going, yeah, we did that. And an organization values it enough to pay for it.
What's, I guess, further to that, within the business and running the business, what's making you tick at the moment? Is it winning those clients or is it the technical side?
In terms of what gets me out of bed in the morning, I think it's the mixture. So I still love getting my hands dirty in the technical side. And actually, I've had to dust off my rather rusty coding skills, which is a little bit scary. But mixed with that, one day I'm doing business development, another day I've got my my management hat on, understanding how we structure the business and strategy. Another day we're looking at, okay, well, how do we support an issue a customer's having? So every day is different, every moment's different, and that's part of what I love about it.
We're a year down. What have been, or what goes through the head when you're having a low day? What's the narrative that you find or you catch yourself thinking about?
Look, I think the most difficult aspect has been we're experiencing really good growth, but nothing like what I had originally thought we'd experience. So for me, it's, okay, how do we get to the point where we really feel like we've got a sustainable business which is scalable, which we can make a decent living off? At the moment, we mentioned prior to turning the microphones on, that cash flow is a massive issue as a young organisation. So how do you get to the point where you can actually draw a decent income from the business? Mm.
What were your misconceptions in terms of growth?
I guess, I had no misconceptions. I was going to sort of replace my salary in the first year, but I was hoping that I'd sort of get close to that, and I think it's going to be probably a couple of years rather than 1 year. I think it's going to be more like 2 years. So that's probably the biggest misconception. I think the other big misconception, and I mentioned it earlier, was that if we offered a similar sort of outcome to businesses at a fraction of the price, then they would come running. And I think the reality is that there are other reasons why businesses will not take these sorts of offerings up. So in the case of virtual assistants and chatbots, I think with emerging technologies like this, it's very difficult for businesses and potential customers to understand the true value of them. So they get caught up in the hype. They want to have a conversation about it. They love to talk to us about it and say, yeah, we really want to do something. But when push comes to shove and you go, okay, well, now you've got to put some money on the table, they're kind of going, yeah, okay, well, I can see the cost here, what you're charging me. I don't think I truly believe the value I'm going to get for it. So we've been doing a lot of work recently on being able to better articulate the value that organisations are going to get from these sorts of systems. So, for example, in a commerce system, a commerce virtual assistant, which is essentially a transactional assistant, so it could be a support agent helping support customers after sales queries. It could be a shop assistant. So you think about the way you engage with a shop assistant when you walk into a physical shop. We want to be able to replicate that online. Now, what's the value to an organisation like that? Well, the research shows that online retailers will increase engagement and transactional throughput by somewhere between about 6 and 21%. And having those sorts of stats and information on your fingertips does help make it clearer to organisations what they can potentially achieve.
It's a little bit like one of our previous guests, Jeff Rorsheim, who talked, he'd exited a very successful company and he saw that the cloud was the way of the future, and he spent 2 to 3 years knocking on doors of big corporate saying, you got to migrate your stuff onto the cloud, and they just kept telling him to go away. Or, yeah, we like the sound of it, but security's a problem. The tipping point occurs and now it's just like standard practice. So do you see the maturity of the AI and chatbot and virtual assistant stuff getting to that point where it'll actually just be a non-negotiable with everyone's online experience?
I think it will be, and I don't think it's technology, ironically, that's holding it back at the moment. I think it's people's preconceptions. So there's a lot of hype around bots and what they can potentially achieve. Equally, there's a lot of bots that have missed the mark, and even bots that have been implemented quite well from a technical point of view. So, for example, Telstra stood up one recently around 3 or 4 months ago, which in my opinion has been done quite well, but it still hasn't necessarily been received well, because customers have a preconception about what that experience is going to be. So a lot of it's about managing expectations, and whilst you explain what it is, it's almost more important to explain what it is not.
Tell us about the evolution of your team. How have the team dynamics played out with your partner based in Sydney? You here, how's it all work together?
I think it's worked better than I could have expected. And going into it, I know that I work well with her. I've worked well with her in previous roles, so I was not concerned on that front. But I guess I was concerned about the fact that we're geographically split. But look, with all the modern technologies available to you at the moment, it's really... It hasn't been an impediment, and if anything, having people based in two different cities has been beneficial to us, because it allows us to more easily pursue different markets without having to jump on a plane.
It's a bit of a cliche question, but what's your thinking regarding being based here in Adelaide? You've got these interstate clients. Is there a little voice in the back of your head thinking, geez, it might be a little bit easier if, you know, I've got my Brisbane client, if I was on that side of the country? How's your thinking progressed on that front?
I don't for a moment think I want to move to Sydney or the Eastern Seaboard. One of the reasons I started this company up with my business partner is because I want to remain in Adelaide. I feel very strongly about that. Equally, though, I recognise that running a services and consulting company out of Adelaide is just... It's hard work, and that's part of the reason why I'm so focused on driving the company to more of a product focus.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the first chat, one of the benefits of jumping out on your own is lifestyle. Adelaide being part of that. Are you conscious of needing to stay true to those initial values in terms of why you actually set out to do this? Because when you're running your own business, it's lean, you're scrapping for cash, there is a temptation to run yourself into the ground and actually move away from why you actually set out to do this.
I'm certainly working very long hours. So from that point of view, I'm not sure it's necessarily the best lifestyle choice, but equally, I'm also able a lot of the time to work from home, so I can be there when the kids get home. They probably don't know I'm there half time because I'm screwed away in the study. But look, I think I still feel like we've got the balance right. My wife's very supportive, and while she works full time, we seem to juggle things quite well. So I'm not sure if that answered the question, mm-hmm. but. Certainly staying true to what we're looking to achieve from a lifestyle point of view is important, but I think I'm also conscious of the fact that running your own company requires a certain commitment.
Hmm.
So there's a balance there.
What do your friends talk to you about when, you know, maybe your sort of inner circle of friends as you talk about this process, do you detect anyone that's a little jealous that you've actually made the jump at the point in your life?
I don't think jealous is the right word. I think a lot of my friends are incredibly supportive and excited for me, and perhaps they would like to do that themselves. I know a couple of friends who I've spoken to about doing something similar. And in their minds, the right opportunity just hasn't quite come up yet. So, you know, certainly there are, some of them are keen to perhaps do something similar. But yeah, I've only ever got support from my friends, which has been just awesome.
Just jumping to one of the moments where you had a real sense of euphoria or satisfaction, and it could have been something really small or really large, but it gave you a great buzz. And what
the
was
the first
it?
Contract we signed.
Yeah.
And that's probably a bit of a cliche as well, but the first time a customer sits down and goes, yes, that's what I want. And it was actually with the South Australian Government Department helping in the child protection space, which was quite an interesting sort of job. So helping address South Australia's issue with processing of mandatory reports.
And where were you when they actually said yes? Was it an email? Was it over a coffee? I mean, did you sort of turn around and go, are you sure? Like, you really want this?
Oh, look, I think, no, they were really good, actually. We sat down with them on a number of occasions and they came to us, in fact, and said, look, this is what we want. And it just seemed like a really natural fit. I think the point that was most exciting for me was perhaps a little more mundane than that, was when I got that hot little piece of paper in my hand with the signatures on it. That for me was, yeah, that was kind of nice.
We spoke earlier about kind of what you envisioned for the business when you started out versus what it's become now. What about you personally, where you were at that time versus kind of where you're at now? How have you evolved?
I think I mentioned last time that I really enjoyed my time with IBM and I wouldn't take it back for the world. There's so many great opportunities. But I think equally what this has done for me is it's reinvigorated my love of working with software and with companies and helping them with software and outcomes using software. So I think that for me has been perhaps a little unexpected, because I thought I was already enjoying my previous roles, but just I guess it is something I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to go out and have a stab at running my own company, building a company from nothing. And that just has been so invigorating.
Has there been anything that you've caught yourself doing that you thought, I had no idea that I'd be doing this? I mean, you mentioned actually doing some coding, or has there been anything where you're like, wow?
I guess I kind of half expected I'd need to be doing some coding, because it's either going to be me or I'm going to be employing people, and we're going down that path now, but certainly in the early days you just can't afford to employ a whole lot of people, so I've been doing a lot of myself. Probably one of the things that I wasn't expecting to do is, have any of you guys used WordPress for building websites?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's like pulling teeth, isn't it? You think, yeah. Oh, this will be easy. We'll just set one of these things
Monty,
up.
Monty, you should speak to Monty. Get off WordPress.
I've abandoned WordPress. Yeah. I'm on Wix.
Oh, yeah, Wix is good as
drag
well.
And
yeah.
Drag and drop. Drag and drop. Yeah. Pretty easy.
And I didn't imagine I was going to be tearing teeth out over stupid websites. Frustrating. Anyway, that's something I wasn't expecting to be doing.
What about, you mentioned sort of the applications of where this stuff can be used. Do you see any real opportunity, like an area or an industry you're really excited about that this hasn't taken on, caught on fire just yet, but could happen?
Look, in terms of sheer volume, I think it's definitely in the commerce space, in online commerce. We are already starting to see the emergence of bots which facilitate the shopping process. So eBay have a shop bot, things like that.
So let's be really layman about it. If people who are listening to this don't even really know what you mean by a bot, can you just explain a couple of the variances of what it might be?
Look, one example is something like Alexa or Google Home, where you carry on a conversation using voice. Another example is Siri on your iPhone, where you're using a chat-based interface, so you'll ask it a question and it will interpret the question and respond. So typically you're either got a chat-based text or voice-based text. And it's taking a conversational approach to interfacing with the computer.
This is exactly what we want for Pixstar.
I was flagging with you. It's funny. We talked about this.
So listeners will know about Pixstar, the online platform to book sports stars. So we're in the process of redeveloping the system. We've spoken about version 2 or potentially version 3 having a bot element in terms of facilitating the booking process.
Mm-hmm.
So how would that work in terms of, in terms of how you guys apply it, do you look at a traditional process and then look at the elements that can be brought into a conversational bot-like flow?
I'll just add to that as well, Monts, because just to give you a fraction more context, let's say we've got 800 sports stars sitting on our website, and a lot of the people that hit our website have a range of either concerns or questions that if we created filters or a checkbox scenario, it might be off-putting. So things like how much for a sports star, who's the best in South Australia, I've got to, you know, do you guys handle this? They're kind of the two things that we need to bring together. We've got a wealth of talent and we've got clients who are really unsure where to begin. It could be a bit overwhelming.
Mm. So the scenario you're describing now there, we refer to as a Q&A. Assistant, so question and answer assistant. So it's essentially, what are all the questions we're likely to be asked and what would our responses be to that? And that's fairly typical sort of use case. And the approach we take is very much sitting down with the client and going, okay, what are the questions you're asked?
So then how does it work? So we would say, well, here's 140 questions that might get asked. That doesn't help you though. Then what's the next step? Because we need you to be able to sort of carry on a pseudo conversation with the client online.
Right. So we have, as part of our framework, we've got a whole lot of pre-built dialogue which carries on what I guess you'd refer to as, and what we refer to as chit-chat. So it's the conversation around the real questions. But when you're first sitting down with a client to understand what is it that they truly want the bot to support, it's those core questions you start with, because that's the messaging that you want to get across to your clients.
Mm. Mm.
So this is where we start to talk about what bots are and what they're not. They don't magically learn. They're not artificial intelligence as Hollywood would portray them, and they're a long way from that. But what they are is a tool which will interpret the questions asked of it or the conversation that's being engaged with, and endeavour to respond appropriately.
So if you could provide us with a quote right now on Rooster Radio Live, that'd be fantastic. Thanks,
Paul. Look, friends rates.
One of the ones that I really love, and this is what you want it to be, where you, the experience enhances the outcome, is the ABC one has like a news sort of feed that pops up and suggests, do you want to look at these headlines? You click on it and then it says, do you want to know some more in these areas? And you might pick one of those and it says, great, how about this thing over here? So it allows me to kind of digest the media in a really, really seamless way. Don't know where that was going, but.
Well, I think the parallel and
really
looking,
love ABC.
I do.
Looking at, and one of the areas we're looking at the moment with one of our, it's actually a business partner we're going to market on, what we're referring to as a quote assistant. So if you look at the way you would typically purchase something online, you'd probably go to Google first of all and you'd search for some terms to find some examples of what you're looking for. You'd then probably identify half a dozen that you'd shortlist, and then you'd probably want to do some undertake some more extensive research. So you'd go to review sites, and then finally you'd look for online retailers who are selling the items that you're interested in, and you'd go on to the online retailer and you'd go through a process where you add the items to the basket, and you'll probably rather frustratingly have to register as a new user or say you're a guest user, and then you've got to go through and add them to the basket, put in all your address details. Frankly, it's a pretty painful process. But what if you could, for example, take a conversational approach to that entire process and say, well, here are my needs. I'm going on holidays and I want to take photos. And I want to take photos underwater. Okay, well, you need a camera that's waterproof. Here are some options, and away you go. It's a far more natural process, and that's the future that I see in online retailing, for example.
As long as it's not a James Begley style conversation, the user would be there for probably an hour and a half.
It'd be enthralling, it'd be interesting. You wouldn't get anywhere, but it would be interesting. What have been the roadblocks, the things that have pissed you off?
So something that's been both very positive but also quite painful is we came to the realisation very quickly that we would need to partner with other small organisations to go to market. With being such a small organisation ourselves, we don't have the sales force out there selling our product. We don't necessarily even have a broad, deep product ourselves. So we need to go to other organisations and team with them. And we've done that successfully on a number of occasions. But I think what's been painful is trying to understand, okay, how do we enter into a relationship with another small organisation who's obviously trying to be successful in their own right in a way where everyone wins. And that's a constant, it's a constant battle, I think, in a good way, but it can be quite difficult to formulate something that where everyone goes, yeah, okay, this
and
is good.
There's always a leap of faith. At one point, one of the parties has to kind of bite the bullet and say, what about this? Or let's do this. Or here's the starting point.
Exactly. So we partnered with what I would call a traditional analytics firm early this year to take an offering to market where we were offering a combined traditional analytics, which, and without getting, trying not to get too technical, but sort of the spreadsheet style analytics where you're talking numbers, with the sort of analytics we can offer, which is around natural language processing and text. So pulling insights from emails and other documents into a traditional analytics portfolio. And that campaign we ran and we got some engagement, but in the end there was, I think, it didn't really work as well as I would like. So that's probably one of the things that hasn't gone quite so well.
How did you go about facilitating those partnerships? I'm sure there's quite a few people listening in who are scratching their heads about growth, maybe have the same issues as you. How did you actually go about finding those partners and then actually facilitating some sort of commercial relationship?
Taking a rather tenacious approach to just getting out there and hitting the the pavement. I'm fortunate in that through my career I've established quite a good network of people who I trust and people I know. So first and foremost, I went to them. And it's almost like joining the dots. You talk to one person. My motto is that you never pass up an offer of a coffee because something will come of it.
Mm.
It won't necessarily be your next customer, but it will be an idea. It'll be, oh, you need to speak to this person. Mm. So I'm just gradually traversing this spider web of people really at the moment.
Let's get down and dirty on some of the flow of your business system now. So you're starting out, you don't have a culture, or you don't have a brand. You probably don't have a rhythm or a pattern for the business. I know we have tried lots of things, but we kind of have settled on, let's look 3 months ahead and let's look at this time next year. And that kind of works for us. How have you now defined the pattern of your business?
I think we review where we're at on average monthly.
Yeah.
And look at, okay, where do we want to be in? And 3 months is probably not a bad, I don't think we've necessarily consciously said 3 months, but that's about the horizon. And then looking at where we need to be in between 12 and 18 months, 2 years. So just recently, in fact, we just finished a pretty significant engagement with Super Retail Group, rolling out an internal virtual assistant to help their staff with their questions around things like, oh, where do I order a uniform? What do I do if I've lost my badge? So it's really just trying to redirect a lot of those rather tedious questions that their support team get very frequently to an automated system, and that's been extremely successful. What that's allowed us to do is to validate our thinking on what the product is that we're selling. So we're actually just in the process now of shrink wrapping the product and the messaging around this virtual assistant framework, and we're looking to go to soft launch on that in probably about 3 weeks' time. So that's quite an exciting sort of pivot for us.
Do you do anything to celebrate these milestones?
Crack a bottle of champagne.
So will you?
Actually, we need to crack two, one in Sydney, one in Adelaide. But
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You've got to celebrate your small successes.
Yeah. Have you been, it is an important question. Have you been conscious of creating that little moment where you celebrate something?
Absolutely. I think you've got to, otherwise it just becomes a grind like anything else. And I think it also helps you celebrate your progress as well, however small that might be.
From a business strategy perspective, what are maybe two or three dot points that have been added to the strategy that weren't there a year ago?
There's a much more of an increased focus on marketing. So just due to my, to Lisa's background and my background, I think we've got a tendency to, revert to our old style of selling, which is really the personal touch. Mm. So sitting down with customers, understanding what their business needs are and looking at how we, deliver outcomes against those business needs. And that's, I still love that as a model, but it doesn't scale well and it doesn't sit well with taking a product approach. So, Lisa and I are constantly reminding ourselves if we want to take more of a product approach, we need to be far more active in marketing. So how do we market? That's something that doesn't come naturally to us. And that's something we're still grappling with, to be honest.
Mm. You talked about, adding people potentially. To your team. Have you thought about the culture element and what is it that you want your business to look and feel like, especially when you're having to bring other people into the mix?
I have, yes. And I think for me, it's about I'll answer the question a slightly different way. When I was young, I used to employ people into my team, I was very heavily focused on their technical abilities. And as I've got older and hopefully a little bit wiser, I've realised that the culture is just so much more important. So these days, I'm really looking for people who I think will fit with a culture. And for me, it's one of being excited about what you're part of, having an energy and an ability to think outside the box, particularly in a small organisation, you have to, and having a culture of, yes, we can do this.
As we begin to wind up the conversation, interested to know where you draw your inspiration from, particularly in the last year.
Goodness me. I think from the people around me. I mentioned earlier that my family, my wife and my friends are incredibly supportive and you know, perhaps a little envious, but I think more excited for me. And I draw my inspiration from that. I also draw my inspiration from knowing that this is something I've always wanted to do since you know, pretty much graduating from uni. And I'm probably only going to have one crack at this. So either make it work, or I don't, and I go back to finding a job for another company, and I'll probably do so with my tail between my legs to a certain degree, because I will have felt like, no, I haven't been successful. So that fear of failure, I think, motivates me as much as that excitement and the encouragement from the people around me.
Do you feel like you know what you're doing?
Oh, goodness. At one level, yes, I feel like I do, but I think that when I have that feeling, I'm also not being true to what I need to be doing. So I think I always start worrying when I think that I'm on top of things, because I know there's going to be a curveball just coming around the corner that's going to knock me over. So no, yeah. I don't.
Okay, one of my last proper questions before we do rapid fire. What now is your hopes? So just go on the record. Where would you love the business to be in a year's time?
I'd love it to be somewhere where I'm drawing an income and feeling like, yes, there's scope for this thing to grow.
So paying yourself, number of staff, ideal.
I don't really have any particular ambitions about the number of staff. I think for me, it's more about creating an entity which people value. And
to kick off rapid fire,
ooh.
The book or podcast or YouTube clip or other piece of content that inspired you or you identified with, particularly in the last year.
There was a book recommended to me by a mentor when I first started called The Lean Startup. If you're starting a new company, go out and buy it, because seriously, it's been quite inspirational for me, I think.
One of the names that you would consider a mentor?
Someone who's been very good to me and provided me with lots of advice over the last year is Steve Mabbs, who has got a services company himself.
When you're under the pump, feeling a bit frustrated, a bit over it, what do you do to change your thinking?
Take the dog for a walk around the block.
The one aspect of your new work life that you love?
What I love, equally what can be frustrating at times, is the opportunity to work in Adelaide most of the time and work from home when I need to and want to.
One thing you love about working from home, one thing you hate about working from home.
Oh, my wife's going to laugh at me. I love working from home because you're your own person. There's also a certain expectation, though, when you work from home. But, yeah, don't leave the lunch dishes. That's a lesson I've learned the hard way. If your wife gets home and the lunch dishes are there, not cool.
What is a behavioural trait when you're under pressure?
I get really brusque.
Brisk?
Brusque.
Brusque,
is that the right word? Abrupt. I just become very results focused. Yep. Right, okay, this is what we're going to do. How are we going to get there? Yep. And I have this tendency to steamroll.
Well, Paul, mate, thank you for coming in. I'm loving where this is heading, and I can't wait to check in again. Hope let's not make it a year. Let's make it 6 months, because this world changes quickly. But again, thank you for being vulnerable enough to open yourself up and share the journey with Rooster Radio, and we're really excited to hear about the next evolution.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. And I love aspirational goals. 6 months is one of those. So let's go for that. And thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening to Rooster Radio with Paul van der Linden. For more information, check out Paul's company at outthought.co and revisit part one of our series via the link in this episode description. Connect with us and listen to more than 100 interviews with interesting people doing amazing things at roosterradio.biz. And if you like what we're doing, please subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favourite podcast player.